Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, State Treasurer and Findlay native Robert Sprague joins us to recap his experience as part of the Ohio delegation at this week's Republican National Convention. We'll also ask his reaction to the decision by President Biden to drop out of the race. Also this morning, how much energy did you use at the office over the weekend? As much as half the power consumption in the workplace comes from the things that remain plugged in 24/7. And this week marks National Hire a Veteran Day. It's one of the best ways to honor those who have served the country, but too many companies have a job screening and hiring process that makes it more difficult than it should be. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, July 22nd, 2024. So for the second weekend in a row, there was major breaking news that could directly impact the direction of the presidential election. And for the second Monday in a row, here we are, left to contemplate just how deeply this all will reverberate between now and November. The difference being last week's assassination attempt on President Donald Trump was completely unexpected, while President Biden dropping out of the race was less so. Although, even on the Sunday news shows, just hours before the president made his announcement, the topic of conversation was how Democrats could overcome the handicap of a wounded Joe Biden, politically wounded Joe Biden, remaining on the ticket. And now, I guess, that issue is not a thing anymore. Now the big question is, what happens next month at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago? And it struck me, all of the similarities, all of the parallels to the 1968 presidential race. That was the last time that a sitting president who was eligible for re-election decided not to seek or accept his party's nomination. That, of course, LBJ. And here we have that scenario again. It was during the 1968 presidential election, the last time we had an assassination attempt on a candidate. That, of course, Robert F. Kennedy. It was a successful assassination of Robert F. Kennedy during the campaign. And we were talking a little bit about that last week after the assassination attempt on Donald Trump in the aftermath, is the last time we had a shooting of a presidential candidate during an election cycle. And furthermore, it was kind of that year after LBJ decided not to seek re-election, it became sort of a three-way race with Robert F. Kennedy in the mix. And here in 2024, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is, the third party candidate, or the third wheel in this election, not getting a whole lot of support, certainly less support than RFK did in 1968 prior to his death. But here's another RFK in the race. And the Democratic National Convention, where was it? 1968? Chicago. So, I mean, just all kinds of incredible parallels here between then and now. What do they say about history repeating itself? Well, here we are. So for her part, Vice President Harris wasted no time reaching out to supporters for the first time as a presidential candidate with an email that she sent out last evening, Sunday evening, asking supporters to make their first donation to her presidential campaign. The Act Blue PAC, the Political Action Committee, Act Blue, said it raised $27.5 million for Kamala Harris in the 5 hours immediately following Joe Biden's announcement that he would be dropping out of the race, stepping aside, and throwing his support behind his vice president. The Democratic delegations from at least five states are now on record supporting and endorsing Vice President Harris for the Democratic nomination. Tennessee became the first state delegation to fully pledge their support for Harris. North Carolina, South Carolina, New Hampshire, and Louisiana soon followed. The national finance chair for the Biden Victory Fund told NBC News that he believes there will be enough pledged delegates for Harris to be the nominee by the end of business Wednesday. She could have the nomination locked up by the close of business Wednesday. So it'll be interesting to see how the party handles this moving forward, but it looks like they are at least there's some semblance of organization here. And the polls suggest that Kamala Harris is doing slightly better against Donald Trump in a head-to-head than Joe Biden did. But she's still the underdog. The one thing that we have now that we didn't have in 1968, we were talking about all of the parallels between this election and 1968, all of the commonalities. The one thing we didn't have, I don't believe, in 1968 were betting odds. But in 2024, we bet on everything. And so the current betting odds on the election, Donald Trump is the favorite, remains the favorite at minus 200, the latest updated odds, minus 200. Harris is the underdog at plus 185. So now the question becomes, if indeed she will be able to lock up the nomination this week, who will she select as her running mate? So that is the next big question to be answered. So stay tuned. A couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, not related to the presidential election that everybody is talking about as we head into the new week. The CDC says two people have died because of a listeria outbreak in multiple states connected to deli meat. In a warning issued on Friday, the CDC said at least 28 others have been hospitalized. Two have died, 28 hospitalized at least. But the number of those who were sickened by the outbreak may be much higher than that due to some milder cases not even being tested for listeria. It is unclear, they say, what meat is responsible for those getting sick, and no recalls have been issued. So basically, they issued the statement to panic everyone. I mean, that's really the long and short of it, right? If they don't know what caused it, if they haven't issued a recall, then the only thing that you can really accomplish by making this announcement is to panic everyone. Don't eat deli meat. Most of the people that became sick reported eating liverwurst or turkey. Some said that they ate ham prior to falling ill. The two deaths, by the way, were reported in New Jersey and Illinois. So this is a wide-ranging outbreak, and we have no idea what's behind it and no recalls. So you're on your own, basically, the CDC says. You're on your own. By the way, speaking of products that have not been recalled that maybe should be, this is kind of interesting. The Ohio Department of Agriculture has issued a warning about a pet product sold in some Dollar Tree stores in the state. The State Department of Agriculture says Sargent's Nature's Guardian Flea and Tick Control for cats and kittens contains pesticides that are not listed in the ingredients. Products that contain those chemicals have specific instructions for their use, which are not printed on the packaging. So they're not listed in the ingredients. They're not proper handling instructions, not printed on the packaging. The ODA has notified the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and I'm assuming the Consumer Product Safety Commission, but they have not issued a national recall. On the Ohio level, though, the Department of Agriculture has ordered any remaining inventory not to be sold. So they need to hold on to that. But again, one of those things that you want to know about, right? You want to know about these things. It's very important. Weird that that should come out of Ohio, but not the national authorities, federal authorities. So, yeah. And how about this? We'll finish up the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, with something on the lighter side here. Based on Instacart data, the most popular ice cream flavor in the United States. What do you think it is? If you said vanilla, you are exactly correct. No big shocker. I think we've gotten different analyses of data and surveys and everything many times over the years that show vanilla, most popular ice cream flavor in the United States. So not a big surprise based on this Instacart data. Chocolate ice cream and cookies and cream come in second and third, respectively. But I thought this was kind of interesting, and what made me mention it caught my eye. The breakdown, state-by-state breakdown. Vermont orders the most ice cream nationwide, according to Instacart. Vermont. The least ice cream is ordered in Hawaii, of all places. And it's rather warm in Hawaii. You would think that ice cream would be big. But Hawaii orders 28% less than the national average. And they broke it down regionally. Rocky Road is the most popular ice cream flavor in the West. Moose Tracks, most popular in Middle America, where we are. Our neighbors to the north in Canada, they love mango, green tea, and pistachio-flavored ice cream. I knew that they were weird, Canada. Green tea ice cream? Come on. I mean, pistachio, okay. Mango, all right. But green tea-flavored ice cream in Canada. And Ohio's favorite flavor is chocolate chip, according to the data. So, now you know. Very important stuff to let you know this morning. The first things you need to know to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny skies expected today with a high in the low 80s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the middle 60s. The Finley High School Athletics Program has been named a 2024 recipient of the Quality Program Assessment Award presented by the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association. Finley High School Athletic Director Nate Wyrow.
For Finley High School to achieve the highest honor nationally through the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association and achieve exemplary status while also being only the fourth school district in the state of Ohio to have ever achieved such recognition is a true testament to the Finley City School District, coaches, staff, students, supporters, and Finley community.
Get more of our conversation with Nate about the award and the story on our website. There's a push at the Ohio State House to cut down on the theft of catalytic converters.
There's been an explosion of catalytic converter theft in Ohio.
Ohio State Representative Bill Romer is working alongside Representative Phil Plummer to tackle this through legislation.
You have a repair bill from a muffler shop, so you have to have proof that you are legally the owner of that catalytic converter.
Get more on this story on our website. The Putnam County Health Department says it's received confirmation from the Ohio Department of Health that a bat from the county has tested positive for rabies. A resident from Union Township brought the bat to the health department for testing after an incident with their dog. The health department says residents should not fear spending time outside, but exercise caution around bats due to the risk of rabies, and that pets should be kept nearby and monitored for any signs of illness, as rabies is almost always fatal to pets. Get more in the story on our website. The Finley Airport says this is your chance to be part of something special. The Run the Runway 5K is coming up at the airport. The 5K is in support of a scholarship in honor of local aviation legend Hal Durbin. The Run the Runway 5K is coming up in September. Get more details and sign-up information in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com. We'll be right back.
our cover story this morning. Last week, Ohio treasurer and Findlay native Robert Sprague spent some time in Milwaukee. Of course, he was a member of the Ohio delegation at the Republican National Convention last week. And over the weekend, we spoke to him about that most unique experience. Have you been a delegate before? Was this your first convention? Or kind of lay out, what were your expectations kind of going in?
Well, I didn't know what to expect, Chris. I've not been to a convention before. I was scheduled to go as a delegate in 2020. And of course, that was canceled because
right.
of COVID.
Right.
I went and I didn't have exact expectations as to know what to expect. But it was so thrilling. I mean, as soon as we got there and, you know, we pull in on the buses and we're rushing to the floor at the Ohio delegation, you know, we get down there and pretty soon as we're on the floor and, you know, we're so excited, we're casting our votes for Donald Trump as our party's nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to see some of the Twitter news come across that there's a security detail at J.D. Vance's house. And, you know, it start to spread among our delegation. And,
I'm sure.
I mean, the excitement that first day was just incredible.
So I was going to ask, what was, given the extraordinary lead up to the convention, I mean, we all know what happened just a few days before everything started. What was the vibe in Milwaukee? What can you say about the mood and kind of the mindset of your fellow delegates, both from Ohio and those from other states that you were able to meet and speak with?
You know, I think it was very, very sobering. You know, I think the assassination attempt, I don't think that it made people as angry as just as much as I think very reflective and thinking about what this means for our country. It's surreal to think that our convention, you know, we could not have had, you know, Donald Trump could have not been there.
Right. Yeah.
And what would have that looked like? What would have that meant for our country, and not just our party, but or the convention? But what would that have meant for the entire United States of America and
right.
for democracy and the rule of law and elections? You know, the fact that someone would assassinate him. So, I think also there was confusion because you don't know how to react to something like that. It's only mm-hmm. something we've read about in my generation.
Right.
And I don't think anybody knew what was next. There's no playbook for this.
Yeah.
And so I think we were looking for leadership, and that's, you know, with the J.D. Vance announcement, and you could kind of see things begin to roll. And so you walk in there with kind of this, not sense of expectation so much, but kind of a little bit, you walk in there unsettled, and of course there's all the security around,
mm-hmm.
which reminds you that there could be another attack.
Yeah, reminds you of the gravity of it all.
Of the realism,
you know,
that there could be another attack there. And I mean, the Secret Service, I mean, you would not believe how many officers and how much security we had to go through. And
yeah.
and so you just walk into this kind of very almost surreal experience and you don't know what to expect. And I think people were looking for leadership. People were looking for a path forward. And I think that's, you know, so it kind of began with J.D. Vance, and then it ended, you know, we can talk more about what everybody had to say, but then it ended with Donald Trump's remarks. And I thought
right.
it was just a phenomenal, the whole experience was great. And I think it also has energized our party to move forward.
I want to ask you about all of those things. You referenced the selection of J.D. Vance. One of the highlights for the state of Ohio at the convention was J.D. Vance's selection as the former president's new running mate. What are your thoughts on what J.D. Vance brings to the ticket?
Well, first, I want to say that we made all the other states just a little bit jealous because every time JD's name was you know, mentioned, we'd start screaming. I mean, we're so excited about the prospect of an Ohioan being vice president of the United States. And he's done a great job his first 2 years. And obviously, you know, we believe in him. I think what he brings to the ticket, you know, he brings multifold things to the ticket. First of all, I think from an intellectual standpoint, obviously he's a very smart individual, but he's not going to forget where he came from in Middletown, Ohio. And I think it's that blend of those two things. It's like he can talk about all the Trump issues because that's his story, you know, and he can put his finger on the pain of so many little communities, whether it's in Ohio or Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, all these Midwestern states where we've been hollowed out because our jobs have gone overseas. Our industry has gone, you know, to Mexico, it's gone to China. And what we've gotten in return are these cheap goods from China and Mexico, lost jobs to China and Mexico, and fentanyl. And so, you know, I think, you know, he can speak to that because it's part of his personal story. And yet he's able to put this intellectual piece on top of it, where I think he can talk to a different set of voters, you know, using terms and language and reasoning with them about the ideas of, you know, that Donald Trump has brought forward and the Make America Great Again movement. I think the second thing he brings to the ticket is he's a younger demographic. And so he's going to be able to speak to those voters, the younger voters. And the third is, I think that he brings some excitement because he's not as much of a we know him here in Ohio, but he's not as much of a national figure. And I think there's, you know, I think the voters are going to want to hear, what's this guy about? And I think he's going to be able to tell that story. And it's the story about the hollowing out of middle America, about the hollowing out of the middle class. And hopefully it eventually is a story about redemption and us getting our manufacturing base back and our strength back.
Obviously, a lot of eyes on former President Trump on Thursday evening, given the shooting just days earlier, not just with respect to the convention and Republicans, but really a lot of people even outside the party tuning in on Thursday just because of everything that led up to the convention last week. He famously said going in that he threw out his original acceptance speech and rewrote it. Clearly, when it came time to get up in front of the crowd, he went off script quite a bit and did face some criticism for the length of the speech. What was your reaction? What are your thoughts after hearing from Donald Trump on Thursday?
Well, I mean, first of all, in terms of length of speech, I was expecting that length of speech.
You were expecting an hour and a half?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've been to Trump rallies before, right? I know the drill, and I know the format. And the format is, you know, read off the teleprompter for some inspirational ideas and words, and then he kind of turns to us as an aside, and he tells a story or two, you know, or editorializes it. And it's a very I think it's a very effective way to communicate. And I don't know that you can dispute that because obviously, I mean, you got an overwhelming support of the Republican Party, and obviously, you know, was elected president of the United States. So I thought it was a great speech. I thought he did a fabulous job. I mean, look, but before we even get to the speech, just the fact that this man is able to get up every single morning, you know, they tried to take away his fortune by taking away his, you know, the Trump Tower itself, his iconic tower that he's proud of in New York City. They tried to take away his freedom by putting him in jail with these charges that, you know, they convicted him on a law that's never been used to convict another single person in the history of the state of New York. It just boggles my mind. And then, and then this assassin tried to take away his life. And I mean, he clearly just made this decision that he was going to run at whatever the cost. And I feel like he's doing it for the people and for the American people and the cause. And many of the people he's doing it for, quite frankly, are those communities that have been forgotten, like those in Ohio that have been forgotten. And I admire him. Let's focus on everything else that led up to the speech as well. Simply the fact that he was there that evening is an extraordinary act of providence, and extraordinary courage to literally put everything he has on the line for the American people and for our party and for our country.
Before I let you go, almost out of time, but I do want to ask you about this, because as we are having this conversation, it is Sunday afternoon. The news has just broken less than an hour ago that Joe Biden is stepping aside as nominee for the Democrats. He will not seek a second term. Can Republicans call this a victory, or what is your reaction to that news?
I don't know. I find it sickening, quite frankly. I mean, it's not as if there's been a change in his mental condition over the last 6 months. You know, 6 months ago, in my opinion, he should have said, this is going to be my last term. I'm not going to run again. And then you have a democratic process. You have an election, and everybody in the Democratic Party gets to compete for the nomination for president of the United States. You know, the way that I look at this is they intentionally waited until the last minute to take, you know, because nobody's going to be able to beat an incumbent president of the United States. You know, these insiders in Washington, D.C., this is just my opinion, it makes it look like they waited until the last minute so that they could then pick the presidential, you know, nominee from the Democrats, not just to be able to win, but also so that that presidential nominee would be beholden to them instead of the people that would have elected in a primary process the Democratic candidate, So I find the whole thing deeply disturbing. I think it's a den of thieves there in the Capitol that have kind of come up with this scheme. And I don't think that no matter what they do, they're going to be able to beat Donald Trump. We have such tremendous momentum coming out of the convention. I don't think they're going to be able to beat us.
It is certainly a race that has taken some in unprecedented twists and turns already. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out from here. Again, Robert Sprague with us this morning, Ohio treasurer, a member of the Ohio delegation at last week's Republican National Convention. Robert, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you, Chris.
Well, here is something interesting to think about as you head back to work on this Monday morning. How much energy did you use over the weekend at the office while nobody was there? These days, of course, businesses have to look for ways to cut costs anywhere they can, and many people do not realize just how much energy is being wasted, really, by devices that are plugged in and forgotten about. Now, depending on the type of building, these loads can account for between 25 and 50% of office energy consumption. And if environmental impact is your concern, energy usage in commercial buildings and related processes account for approximately 37% of global CO2 emissions. Sid Chatterjee is general manager of Breakthrough Initiatives for Building Management Systems at Honeywell Building Automation with us on the line this morning. And Sid, these are pretty significant numbers that I would imagine are going to raise a few eyebrows here.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't realize that. Like the fact that you had shared 37% of the world's energy flows to our buildings. And even if you consider at minimum, 25% of that is plug loads. That means those plugs across all around the world are actually drawing 10% of the world's energy.
Wow.
That's an interesting number.
Yeah. It'll definitely grab your attention. So what devices in a typical commercial building, like an office building, what are the ones that are using the most energy?
While you have a lot of computers and you can multiply them at scale, the biggest energy guzzlers would be maybe a coffee machine, a water cooler, a vending machine, a beverage cooler, the large office printers and everything. These are pretty common in any commercial office. They do remain always connected. That's what we're trying to go after, that these devices, which are continuously connected, drawing power, are contributing to that 20 to 30% of your building's energy consumption.
So how do we reduce power usage without You know, there are some things like, you know, the refrigerator or at work or whatever can't really necessarily just unplug it. Or even like the copy machine or the printers, you're not using them all the time, but you want them to be available right away when you do need to use them. So how do, you know, business owners, business managers, building owners and so on, help reduce some of that power, that wasted power usage?
Absolutely. The simplest solution would have been that I put up sign that everybody needs to unplug everything whenever they're leaving or the day is done. But we all know that really gets followed. And I think this is where technology comes in, that instead of having regular outlets, can we have really smart outlets that can be managed from a building management system and then can be controlled so that a particular device, think of that same coffee machine, it needs to provide coffee on demand during the office hours, say 7 to 5. So the outlet that can now be programmed to operate or provide power between 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. every working day and remain switched off during the rest of the time, including over the weekends, is what connected power is all about. A capability that now allows you to exactly achieve that, so that you now save almost 60% of the running hours of that same coffee machine that was keeping your water warm always, so that on-demand coffee could be provided whenever it is needed. And that's where the savings actually come from.
That's an interesting point as well, that even if these things are on constantly, plugged in and ready to go at a moment's notice during the workday, honestly, most of the hours that they're plugged in are outside the workday. So it really only makes sense. It's something you called connected power.
Connected power is that technology that is allowing it to do that. We recently launched this for our North America market, retrofittable outlets. That means you take out your old traditional outlet, replace it with a equivalent looking connected outlet. These are smart outlets, get connected wirelessly to your building management system. And now you, through your existing building management system, you are being able to manage that, provide that schedule, when it should be on, when it should be off, and in turn, cutting out the utilization of that same coffee machine during the off-work hours, resulting in your energy savings.
So it's interesting, and I want to go back and underscore something that you mentioned, but I think maybe we skipped over, and I think this is probably important as well. When you talk about the big draws, the vending machines and the copiers and computers, printers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But also, all of those devices, and we're all guilty of this, all of those devices that we have at our desks or at our cubicles individually that we plug in and have a tendency to leave plugged in as well.
Yep. And they too, think of all the monitors. Even though a single monitor might not be a huge contributor to that bucket of energy that we talked about,
mm-hmm.
but scores of monitors on every desk, every cubicle, including typically today we find docking stations very common in today's office spaces.
Sure.
They remain completely powered on. And controlling each and every device, putting in that schedule that matches with the requirement of the office space where it is being used, leads to that savings that we are talking about. And I think our initial pilots, we are seeing great responses, almost 40 to 45% on an average of driving savings on that plug load bucket. So there is an ability to create real impact, not only in saving energy and providing bottom line returns to building owners and operators, but it's a huge impact to the planet's energy consumption that we have.
Yeah. all the way around. It is a win-win. And again, this is something that is all too often overlooked. Sid Chatterjee is General Manager, Breakthrough Initiatives for Building Management Systems at Honeywell Building Automation. Talking about this connected power initiative, where do folks learn more about this and what it may be able to do both today in the and in the future?
Absolutely. For people who would love to know more about this, I would recommend them to go to buildings.honeywell.com. It has all the information about connected power and all our other offerings. Also allows for people to even request further information through a form where if somebody wants more information, a more detailed presentation on this, including how to get it installed in their building, somebody from Honeywell would reach out to them based on their request.
Sid Chatterjee, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
The Paris Olympic Games begin this week, opening ceremonies on Friday, and the first competitions, I guess the first medal events will be held on Saturday. Some of the competition actually gets underway ahead of the opening ceremonies, but officially the Paris Olympics will open on Friday, and just in time for the Olympic Games, Paris's newest museum is now open. Now, Paris is a haven for, you know, great art and all of that. A lot of just tremendous museums, none greater than the Louvre. This may actually give that world-renowned museum a run for its money. The Musée du Fromage is the city's first cheese museum. Yes, that's right. A museum dedicated to all things cheese. The Musée du Fromage. The museum allows visitors to immerse themselves in the practices of French cheese making with interactive exhibits, workshops, and of course, a fully working creamery and cheese shop. The museum collaborates with farmers in and around Paris and throughout France. And admission will cost you a little over $21 per person. So. The Museum of Cheese in Paris is now open. Now, having said that, I bring it up, and yeah, it is kind of weird. But before you start passing judgment on how weird the people of Paris are when it comes to their foods, it says in the Bible, let those without sin cast the first stone. And I'm not sure that Jesus was talking about this necessarily when he said that, but I think it applies. Making the rounds on social media right now, a recipe for chicken fried watermelon. You heard that right. Chicken fried watermelon. Apparently, the way this is done, you slice up a watermelon, coat it in breading, flour and such, and then you put it in a pan, fry it up like you do fried chicken. The result, according to those who are in the know, who have tried it, the result is a refreshing yet crunchy bite. And this is making the rounds on social media. Videos of the chicken fried watermelon process have racked up over 500,000 views at last count. Not everyone necessarily is a fan. One user said this person should be banned from cooking immediately, but this is America, and we love our chicken fried everything. I can imagine that this will, if it hasn't already appeared at a county or state fair somewhere, it will soon. Chicken fried watermelon. So before we laugh at the Parisians for their Musée du Fromage cheese museum, I'm not sure we have a whole lot of room to make fun. Elsewhere in the broken news, also in the category of food, a rare orange lobster was saved from the dinner plate and has a new home now in Denver, Colorado, at a local aquarium, Denver. The lobster has been named Crush because it's orange, right? Orange Crush. The lobster was delivered to a Red Lobster restaurant in Colorado, where it was discovered by one of the workers in the kitchen right before it was set to be, you know, cooked and served to a patron. So thank goodness the heads up cook discovered this orange lobster. Genetic mutations can happen in lobsters. They can be yellow. They could be orange. They could even be blue on rare occasions. This one was orange, and so they saved the orange lobster and named it Crush, which not so much the drink. The name Orange Crush, the lobster, comes from the Denver Broncos Orange Crush defense in the late 70s and early 80s. The general manager of the Red Lobster, where the where Orange Crush was discovered, says Crush's new tank includes Denver Broncos helmets that he can climb into. So he's... She says, we all want our defensive line to be that good once again. So maybe this is a little, they're projecting a bit, but save the orange lobster. All is well with the world. Crush, the orange lobster, has been saved. A couple of other items here in the broken news. You know how these days it's not uncommon for parents to give their child a unique name, or at the very least, choose a unique way of spelling a more common name. But sometimes that idea can backfire spectacularly, as one set of parents have discovered the hard way. The new mom and dad in question are currently being roasted online after posting a sign with their birth announcement saying, welcoming their new daughter, Anna Lee, 7 pounds, 10 ounces. The problem is Anna Lee is spelled A-N-N-A-L-Y. Now, if you write that down, A-N-N-A-L-Y doesn't look like Anna Lee. It looks like Anally. And a lot of people are roasting mom and dad for not thinking this one through, not running the name through spell check first. One person writing, this kid is going to get so mercilessly bullied throughout her life. One other person pointed out, this is not the traditional way to give birth, but at yes, to each their own. It's Anna Lee, spelled A-N-N-A-L-Y. Can you imagine the first day at school? Teacher reading off the names, taking attendance for the very first time. Jim, Sam, Mary, Anna Lee. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the quiet hamlet of Allington in Lincolnshire, England, was invaded by 1,000 campers over the weekend attending Swing-a-thon, described as Great Britain's largest swingers festival. The four-day event included play tents, pole dancing, hot tubs, foam parties, okay, sensual massages, and bingo. It said, the event offers a very social and safe space for people with different lifestyles to meet others who share their, I guess, enjoyment, or who share their enthusiasm. This, according to local news reports, government police force in the town objected to the event taking place last year, citing concerns about a public nuisance, crime, disorder, and protecting children from harm. But the organizers were able to get a permit once again this year anyway. Organizers say the local government are more supportive this year. course, there are still locals who weren't happy about it. One told a local newspaper, quote, "Each to their own, I suppose, but really, we don't need it or want it in our village." Swing-a-thon. I'm just here for the bingo. I'm just here for the bingo. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You don't think twice about wearing your seatbelt. Going boating? Real boaters wear a life jacket. It's easy to do. Accidents can happen quickly, and if you're not wearing your life jacket, you won't have time to put it on if it's stowed. So pick a comfortable life jacket and wear it. Remember, life jackets are for everyone, regardless of your age or swimming ability. Have fun, make memories, and boat responsibly. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council and U.S. Coast Guard.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You remember last week we were talking about avoiding e-commerce and online scams with the occasion of Amazon's Prime Day event, avoiding e-commerce and online scams. Well, an interesting new survey, just to underscore the importance of this, an interesting new survey of 2,000 Americans finds that 34% admit to having been victims of a scam. 34%, that's one in three of us, admit to having been victimized by a scam on some level. And 8% of those in the survey say they have been a scam victim. They were hoodwinked within the past month, just within the past month. And this, I thought, was really telling, and it kind of, again, circles back to what we were talking about last week on the program with respect to this. 48% of Americans in this survey believe that artificial intelligence, AI, has made them less capable of detecting scams. It's harder than ever to tell what's real and what's fake in everything. I mean, you see pictures online or things that people post, and you wonder, is that real? Is that a real person? Is it AI? And even with scams, nearly half of Americans say AI makes it more difficult to avoid being taken. Just underscores why you need to be extra vigilant these days. By the way, of course, the big news to start the week was the announcement yesterday by President Biden that he would be stepping aside and not seeking a second term as president. And the fallout from that has been all the headlines, all anybody has been really talking about with respect to that. And we were talking about it a little bit earlier on the program with State Treasurer Robert Sprague, who was at the Republican National Convention last week. We should mention that we did over the weekend reach out to the chair of the Hancock County Democrats for comment, reaction to the president's decision. As of this morning, we have not received a response from that request, but we will continue to talk about it and obviously continuing coverage throughout the day, throughout the week here on WFIN as everybody wonders what happens next with all of this. Not the last time we're going to talk about this. But setting that aside here, want to finish up the morning with our salute to service today, because this week marks National Hire a Veteran Day. It actually is coming up on Thursday. And every year, approximately 200,000 men and women leave the U.S. military service and return to life as civilians. Unfortunately, the traditional ways that businesses have of screening and hiring new employees can make that transition more difficult, more challenging than it needs to be for many service members to land those civilian jobs as they transition out of the military. For National Hire a Veteran Day, again on Thursday of this week, Capital One is partnering with Hiring Our Heroes, Empower Inc., and the Bob Woodruff Foundation to help create career pathways for veterans. And Carl Chivacco is with us this morning. He is currently a senior director at Capital One, who is also a veteran. And Carl, not just a veteran, actually, you are a West Point graduate. So one would think that it would be fairly easy in your case to launch a post-military career. But did you face those same challenges as well?
You know, it's always challenging when you're in the military environment. Transitioning to corporate America, the lingo changes, expectations change. So it's always challenging changing career directions.
So what did you know and what did you not know about transitioning into a corporate role that you can share with other transitioning military individuals, and especially to civilians who are hiring these individuals?
Sure. So a couple things, that I learned along the way. The first one, you know, as a veteran leaving the military, you want to find companies that understand veterans and have support structures at the organization. Second, as a veteran, you want to lean into soft skills. Veterans are natural leaders and know how to build trust and inspire teamwork. And finally, it's important to leverage your network of those who have served before you and already transitioned to corporate America and give them a call. There's a couple things that companies can do on a flip side. The first is having a dedicated military recruiting team is very important because those military recruiters understand a military resume, which is quite different than one from corporate America. Second, companies can have mentorship programs to help veterans once they join understand the culture and what's required of them. And finally, just companies can partner with organizations that place veterans, like Hiring Our Heroes.
So tell us more about Hiring Our Heroes and the work that they do.
Yeah, it's a great organization. It's part of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And Capital One has partnered with Hiring Our Heroes for many years. The purpose is to help transitioning veterans get a job in corporate America. And, it really is a fabulous organization.
So, how can corporations, you mentioned a couple of things, what can they proactively do to support the hiring of veterans? And by the way, hiring their families as well, spouses and so on, because many times they are kind of transitioning in a way as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things that we look for in characteristics, it's people that are hardworking, flexible, like to work in teams. And companies can really seek out veterans and military spouses that often have these skills. So any of those programs, whether they're internships, or programs like Hiring Our Heroes, those are all great ways for corporations to make that connection to veterans and military spouses.
Now, it says here we want to talk about something called a salute. What is this? What is its purpose? Kind of fill us in on this.
Yeah, I mentioned having internal support structures at companies is important for veterans. And Salute is Capital One's internal business resource group to help veterans and military spouses. So it's about 6,000 strong, made up of reservists, veterans, military spouses, and even allies. And the purpose is really to foster a sense of military community at Capital One. And we do that through attracting veterans. We do that through developing veterans. And we also do that through volunteering in the community with military organizations.
For those who are in kind of a similar situation that you experienced, in that transition period or approaching that transition period, or maybe we know someone who is about to enter that stage of life, what would be your advice for them, for those individuals, in terms of making that transition, finding that civilian post-military job to get started?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to doing your homework and leveraging your network. So you want to look for companies that may have military pages, you know, when you go to their website. Mm. You may want to leverage your network. So really look for people that, you know, served potentially in your branch, but that you know well and you trust, and give them a call, you know, because they're going to be serving in companies that you may want to join, and get their view of how the company is. But, you know, I think it's really important. Those are the two areas: leveraging your network and kind of doing your research on whether companies kind of have that military piece on their website.
Fair to add to say to those individuals, don't limit yourself.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. You know, I think sometimes people leaving the military, you know, aren't sure if their skills are translatable. And I would tell them, of course they are. You know, I've hired quite a few veterans at Capital One, and I've been really happy with the results.
Again, Carl Chivacco is currently senior director at Capital One, also a veteran himself, talking about the significance of Hire a Veterans Day. Where do we get more information, Carl?
Please go to CapitalOneCareers.com.
Carl, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Great talking with you. Thanks.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the program director of the new acute rehabilitation unit at Blanchard Valley Hospital explains what it means for patient recovery. Plus, details on another big celebration coming up this week at the Black Heritage Library and Multicultural Center. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.